Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Welcome back to the show. You know, today I want to talk about hope, and I want to talk about freedom, and I want to talk about what happens when there's been devastation in your life, and there's probably nothing that can devastate a person more than betrayal, physical, emotional betrayal. And when you have had that happen in your life, you know that you are in a very difficult place, and your world gets turned upside down, and you don't know what you're going to do, and you feel probably every known emotion that's ever been felt by somebody when it comes to thinking, what do I do next? My guest, Meg Wilson, has gone through some of this that we're going to talk about today. She's written a book called Hope After Betrayal, Healing When Sexual Addiction Invades Your Marriage. Welcome to the show, Meg.
Oh, thank you. Glad to be here.
Thank you. And I know that this is, although you've written a book about it and want to help others, probably never an easy topic to talk about, is it?
Well, no, it's probably not my favorite.
So you wrote the book about 10 years ago, so you've been gone through a tremendous amount of healing. And the great thing about you and your situation right now is we can talk about just about everything, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So about how many years ago did you find out you were having this problem?
Probably around 2000, so almost 18 years now.
Okay. And it was a sexual addiction? Was it pornography? Was it a little of both with your husband?
Well, there were two disclosures. There was a partial disclosure. So in the beginning, I believed it was only pornography, and then later I would find out that he had, in fact, gone outside of our marriage. So all of the information came out in 2001. That was when he really came clean and went through a timeline and really was serious about letting me know everything that happened.
Mm-hmm. And just for our listeners' sake, the story at this point has a very happy ending because you two are still together.
Yes.
Yeah, so I always think it's going to be nice to let our listeners know up front as they listen to you talk that you probably at first wanted to run from the marriage, didn't you?
Yes, absolutely. I thought that would be the easiest way to stop the pain.
And Meg, who would blame you?
No, yeah, no one. No, and I took some time. I knew enough to not make a decision in the heat of the moment because I had been through a group actually before I had all the information. So God had built supports for me for what was to come, unbeknownst to me. And so in the beginning, I did what I thought every good Christian wife does. I just said, I forgive you, and praised God that he told me about the pornography, and we just moved on and really didn't deal with it beyond that. We literally moved to a new state where we found a church that had a group for men. And so I asked the associate pastor, why don't we have a group for women? And he said, oh, that's a great idea. Why don't you go? There's a church 45 minutes away that has a group. Why don't you go through that? And then instead of reinventing the wheel, bring their material over. So that sounded like a great idea. Excuse me. So I went through that. And then now fast forward to literally we're starting our first group at our church. There's 10 women, and I'm supposed to share my testimony of hope. And I get a message on the phone from my husband saying that he was coming home early from a business trip and to make sure that I was home and that the girls were not home. And then that's when the bomb was dropped. So I had to pretty much go from being a facilitator to being my co-facilitator took the lead, and I just went in and had to share with those poor women everything that I had just found out. But I also immediately had 10 women to surround me and offer support.
Mm. It's unbelievable. That obviously must have been just one of the worst days of your life.
Yeah, pretty much. Mm-hmm. I liken it to being in a near-fatal car accident.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you get this news and you've got a number of people in a support system right away. What kind of advice do you get? Is it split? Is it hang in there? Is it leave the bomb? What is it?
Well, you know, we make a point of not giving each other advice, at least not like that.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, the goal of the group I was in and the goal in the, of the groups that I that we facilitate now are always to point the woman back to Christ. So it's like wait and see what he says. And I kind of want to go back to something that you said earlier about my being married is a happy ending. There's always a happy ending for a woman who reaches out for hope and healing in Christ, even if the marriage doesn't survive, because her relationship with Christ is intact, and she has the tools she needs to go forward in whatever her future holds. So I think I'm thankful that my husband did the work, but I know that when I did finally hear from God, he didn't say, stand by your man or, you mm-hmm. know, stay no matter what. He said, I'm not asking you to do this over and over again, but I am asking you to wait. And that was all my heart could hear. And so I waited. And frankly, I waited for quite a while with a toe out ready to run,
mm-hmm.
waiting for the next shoe to drop.
Mm-hmm.
But my husband was sincere in getting help and doing counseling and doing his work, and I gradually could see that there were changes happening, real changes.
So, Meg, when you get this news, I mean, this is like a hurricane going through your household. What are some boundaries that you set up right away just to try to deal with it?
Well, right away, I had 2 girls in high school, so I didn't want to have him leave and come back. I thought that's going to be really traumatic. So I thought, I'm not going to ask him to leave until I'm sure that divorce is where we're headed. So we had what we call an invisible separation, which my daughters would probably laugh at now. But so he stayed in the home, and he wasn't in the room when I was dressing or showering. Or I mean, we pretty much were living as roommates for quite a few months,
mm-hmm.
because I needed that separation. I needed that emotional space to heal.
So what would be your first step towards healing?
Well, I had a counselor. He had his own counselor. I was in a group, and then he was in his group. We also set up a spiritual care team based on the book Restoring the Fallen by Earl and Sandy Wilson. So he chose a couple and I chose a couple that had something similar in their background and that we trusted. And so we would meet with them. And I remember the first meeting, they were asking how I was doing. Like somebody was caring about how I felt. It was really kind of amazing. And they were challenging my husband, and he got really angry. And then one of the men said, well, I don't appreciate the way you're responding, so we're going to end this meeting. And I thought, oh, my gosh, they're going to send me home with them. He's mad. But what was amazing was even in that first meeting, a couple of days later, my husband came back and he said, you know, at some point when 5 people are telling you something is true, you have to believe it's true. And that was a turning point.
Wow. Yeah, it's powerful that he came under the authority and started to listen to people with wisdom and that were loving him, yeah, where he was at, and he was hearing it. That's an important step, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was huge.
Yeah. I need to take a break here in about a minute, but I want to talk about your book and the format of your book. I suppose if you are in the situation, if there's a listener who is finding themselves in this situation, they're going to be desperate for information. They're going to be desperate for perspective. If they were to get your book, what would be the format of your book that they could start to learn from it?
Sorry.
It's all right.
The format, truthfully, the last chapter is written by my husband, and most of the people I know confess to reading that one first, which I just think is funny, because obviously people want to know, what does your husband feel about you writing this book?
Uh-huh.
And then they pretty much devour. It can be read fairly quickly, even though there's a fire hose of information. So I always say, okay, go ahead, read it. It's written in, there's four stories four fictional women that you follow through the different steps of finding out, etc. And so it's pretty easy to read. But then I encourage women to go back and then do the exercises and take time to journal and really think through each of the chapters.
Yeah, you've got something you call lies versus truth exercises. And I want to talk about those, but we're going to take a little break when we come back. That's where we will pick up. My guest is Meg Wilson. Her book is called Hope After Betrayal, Healing When Sexual Addiction Invades Your Marriage. We'll take a short break and be right back. Welcome back to the show. I have on our studio line Meg Wilson. She's written a difficult book to write, but she's sharing her experience with others. It's called Hope After Betrayal, Healing When Sexual Addiction Invades Your Marriage. And her book has got an interesting layout. The format of it is filled with a lot of information, but it's also going to make you do some work and some exercises. She's got a section. You can apply the principles in her book to a situation through the lies versus truth exercises. And Meg, I want to hear all about those.
Yeah, I found that one of the most powerful heart-changing activities for me was when I would find a scripture and it would speak directly to what, to where I was, either how I was feeling or even my situation. And so we incorporated that into the book because most people do, we act out of good intentions. Most people don't intentionally hurt other people. I would say that most misunderstandings are missing information. And so when God would show me how my good intentions had bad results and that I was actually, by not, for example, I'm not setting boundaries for my husband, so I'm actually enabling him to continue poor behavior. I'm enabling him to perhaps not treat me the way I deserve to be treated. And so when it was shifted and I could see, oh my goodness, I'm not actually being graceful or forgiving, I'm actually enabling him to continue in bad behavior, well, that would shift. And then I would have the confidence to stand up and say, no, you can't speak to me in that tone of voice, because I felt like I have the full weight and authority of Scripture behind me. It would completely change the way I would respond, and then in turn the way my husband would respond. So the lies versus truth exercises, we encourage women, depending on what the chapter's topic is, I might give some examples and encourage them to really seek out the scriptures that will show them, that will reveal a lie that they believe and a lie that we are operating under. And then when that's replaced with the truth, well, then that changes the way we act.
Mm-hmm. Meg, when women who have had your experience come to you, what are the questions they ask you? What are they most interested in? What are their biggest questions?
I think some of the biggest questions are, where was God? And I don't know if it's a question, but one of the first lies that we have to tackle is that it's not her fault, because that's the first lie the enemy will try to cement, that somehow you weren't good enough. And that couldn't be farther than from the truth. And also, women are trying to understand, so it helps for them to know that this is insanity. All addiction is insanity. It's a person doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different result. And so we get sucked into the vortex of insanity by trying to make sense of something that can't make sense. It doesn't make sense for men who have beautiful, loving, faithful wives at home to go and pay to be with someone or to be with themselves. That is insanity. So to try to make sense of that is damage. It's so damaging.
Mm-hmm. So how do you and others who have had this experience figure out how to live in freedom versus fear? I mean, can you trust trust has got to be a big issue. I mean, if they say 6:30 and now it's 7:15 and he's not home yet, do you start to race through your mind that, I wonder why he hasn't called or why he's 45 minutes late? Is trust ever rebuilt to a point where you go, no, we're doing fine?
It takes time.
Well,
so in the meantime, it takes time. In the meantime, you can get sucked into that crazy making, or we become detectives. Like, I'm going to check on him. I'm going to check on his cell phone. And neither of those are helpful for the wife. So what do I say? I remember my husband traveled, so he was gone, and I remember just crying out to the Lord and saying, I can't live like this, wondering where he is. And I really felt like the Holy Spirit was so gentle, and he just said, Meg, you can never be everywhere your husband is, but I can. And it was just that gentle reminder that I was trying to put my trust somewhere it didn't belong. There is one person who will never leave me, who will never forsake me, who will never lie to me, and who is capable of letting me know what my husband's up to. And so it was a matter of shifting, no longer trying to put trust in my husband, but putting that trust in Christ. And in fact, that's what I look for today. It's like if I don't, those fears come much fewer and farther, but I'm still susceptible. And when that comes, I just stop and say, okay, what's the truth? Do I see Christ at work in my husband? And I think, oh, yeah. And then the fear goes away. So I always look at the work of Christ in my husband, and I trust that. Because I will forever be married to someone who could betray me again. Even if I got divorced and remarried, I would still be married to someone who could betray me. And we disappoint each other as human beings. So that trust, that total trust, was never, ever supposed to be placed on my husband. It was always supposed to be in Christ. So really, it was just put back where it belongs.
Yeah. Okay, here's a question, Meg, that's kind of a high-risk question for me to ask. If a guy screws up, and he screws up at this level, and this is sin, we'll just call it what it is, and the woman obviously feels horrendously betrayed, as she should, the tendency would be to say, you screwed up, you've got a problem, you get this fixed, you work it out, I've had it. What responsibilities does a wife have in the recovery process of this situation?
Well, it's kind of two different things, because what you're talking about is his process and his recovery. And we have no responsibility, because we have no power. I have only power in my own life and in my own heart. So my responsibility is, how am I going to respond? What is God calling me to do? And I think that's different for every person. There are women who could stand before me and say, God said it's time to go. And I'm like, okay, then if you can stand there and you feel like the full weight of Scripture is behind what you're saying, then you need to do what you need to do. So I think that I'm going to probably give you an at-risk response here. I think that marriage is a bit of an idol in the church. Marriage is an institution that was set up by God, absolutely. It is a holy and sacred act, absolutely. But when you're dealing with what I'm talking about, the covenant has already been broken. So divorce in the heavenly realms has already happened. It is a broken covenant. So the question is, can that be redeemed? Of course it can. If both people will seek Christ and allow him to change their heart. But if one person doesn't and one person does, that other person, that covenant with Christ is secure, and her relationship is secure in him, and her future is still held and carried by him. So it makes me sad that in our society, and sometimes it's the men, it's the women who betray the husband, so I do want to be clear about that. It doesn't really matter the gender, but when one person betrays the covenant and divorce is the result, we treat both people as if they're failures, and we treat both people as if they're somehow responsible, whereas divorce would have never, ever been something I wanted. But had my husband not gotten help and chosen his addiction over me, then God would have very much given me the freedom to go. But here's the sad thing. I would still have been considered a failure, even though I did everything that I was supposed to do as a Christian. So I just throw that out there, that we should be careful. We should treat our divorced people carefully,
because
they are still children of God. And I would say in most divorces, at least half of the one person didn't want it and wouldn't have chosen it.
Great answer, Meg. I love that. Just about a minute or so left. Let me ask you, when kids are involved, what are some things that couples need to keep in mind and remember when, you know, you've got, I know you had two daughters. So what are some of the possible things we need to be aware of?
Oh, so many things. Protect as much as you can. The kids, I mean, they are so vulnerable. And the bottom line is, this is trauma. This is going to be traumatic. I don't care when you tell them. I don't care how they, you know, how old they are. This is trauma. And my kids in their 30s are still wrestling with, now that they're getting married and having, you know, kids, and they're still, this is a part of our backdrop. I wish it wasn't. But what we did do, we encouraged them not to talk to friends, because that could just go, that could bite them in the behind. And so we gave them a counselor, which they could meet with, because they couldn't talk to us. And then we tried to model, what do you do when things go awry in this world? You reach out for godly support through groups or counseling, and you seek Christ, and you take whatever the broken world gives you, and you put it at the foot of the cross, and you hold on to that faith above everything. So my kids, if they've come away from our home with that understanding of what to do when life gets hard, because come on, life is going to be hard, then we've given them everything they need. If they have that firm grasp of Christ and what to do, then they have everything they need.
Mm-hmm. Meg, I appreciate so much you doing the show. I mean, it's such a difficult topic, and there's eggshells all over the place, and hopefully I didn't ask too many stupid questions or say anything that was not a good question. It's such a sensitive subject. I so appreciate you coming on to the show. Meg Wilson has been my guest, and her book is called Hope After Betrayal, Healing When Sexual Addiction Invades Your Marriage. You can pick that up at Amazon.com. Thank you so much, Meg, for coming on the show. Have a great day.
Thank you, Bill.
Yep. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. I'm so glad you're listening today. I always love stories that have not only happy endings, but happy middles and happy beginnings. And this is certainly one of them. I have in studio Marianne Milano. She started many, many years ago volunteering with World Vision and taking on adopting a child on World Vision. You've seen that before, where people do that. Maybe you've done it yourself, and you get the picture of the child, and then you start investing in that person's life. But today, not only do I have Marianne in studio, but I have that person that Marianne invested in. So we're excited to have both of you in studio. I want to first start off by saying greetings, Isaac. Greetings.
Hi, Bill.
Yeah, good. Okay. And Marianne, nice to have you here.
Hi, great. I can't stop smiling. You're bringing back memories.
Let's start.
18 years ago, you're aging me too. But
Okay. That's okay. So let's just go back 18 years ago, and you got involved with World Vision. Mm-hmm. And you thought, I'm going to adopt a child. Is that, did I say that right?
It was an Easter Sunday. I'm at my church, and I'm with my son, newly separated. It was just the two of us and a family. And the call at the altar was, we've got a bunch of posters outside, little cards with kids' names. If you feel so inclined, would you like to sponsor one for, you know, a child for $30 a day? And that's how it means. And I thought, huh.
All right.
Why not?
And you found someone?
So we picked Isaac, but we picked
Isaac,
him.
Why?
Yeah. Well, my son was his age at the time, and my son's birthday is November, and he was looking for a child, a boy, of course, right?
Okay.
So wanted one who was born similar, close to his date. My son's birthday is November. Isaac's is October. And my son loves sports. And football was very important to Brendan. He loved playing. And on the card, it said favorite activity, and it said football. Little did we know he meant soccer, right, Isaac?
Yeah. Yeah.
So we picked up that card 18 years ago, and Isaac has been in our family
okay.
ever since.
Now, where was Isaac living at the time you picked up that card?
Okay, so he's in a community in Uganda called Rakai, and he's living with his mom and sister and two brothers. And he was, from what I was known, he was going, what, walking a mile to pick up water at the well, Isaac, during the day, walking to school an hour. You had long school days. So in order for him to be educated, you know, what World Vision does, goes and teaches you about Jesus, helps the community. It was $30 a day. And that's what we did.
30 a day?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. No. 30 a month.
Would you adopt me?
Yeah. Listen, Mom.
I could probably live on 30 a day.
Yeah. No, so, yeah, 30 a month, yeah.
And how old were you, Isaac, at the time?
Then I was 6 years.
6 years old,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
And 24 today. This is a dream, Bill. I'm still.
Okay.
You
now,
know, still need, pinch me.
We
okay?
need to let our listeners know that you and Isaac are in a studio in Roseville, Minnesota.
Right.
Here on the campus of University of Northwestern, which is a long ways away from Uganda.
Okay.
Never been to America before. This is it. May never be here again.
Yeah. So now, before I get to that, I want to continue down this road because, you know, I would think that the average person who hears about adopting someone the way you did from World Vision is you get a picture, you put it on the fridge, you write a check.
Mm.
That's the perception.
Right.
And
right.
I must be way wrong. So educate me.
So, okay. So I wish I brought my scrapbooks in for you.
Okay.
Every letter, every picture, every drawing that Isaac has ever sent to us, we have in a scrapbook and vice versa. So World Vision does, you know, I'm not here to sell World Vision, but from my point of view, they would write letters, so they would translate, and we'd get letters in English. Isaac does know English now, but he was little then. And we were able to give Isaac a goat, some land, some chickens. You know, you can give gifts. So a Christmas time would come, a birthday would come. We would try to provide for the family in this way.
So where do you go buy a goat? Where do you
Bill?
Go buy a goat?
World Vision knows that answer.
Okay.
Have them on next hour.
So
we had this relationship, and we knew Isaac as family. I mean, my son and I, Brendan, we would pray for Isaac. We knew what he was doing in school, what his favorite subjects were, and then we had a chance to go visit him. So this was key. So
when did that take place?
In 2007, 11 years ago.
Okay.
It was a family, I would say a parent-teen trip through my church.
Okay.
And that was important to me because I wanted Brendan to come. So we went with another family that we know very closely and several others, but one in particular we're friends with. They all have sponsored children. So we get to go bring gifts and meet our sponsored child in their family setting. And we met Isaac, his mom, Betty, his sister, and two brothers.
What is that like? I almost want to burst into tears right now. Seriously.
Saying goodbye was the hardest thing I've ever done.
But, I mean, after communicating with him, to walk into his environment and to see him, a place where you've been praying, supporting, what is that like?
I mean, if I could bring you the pictures, I know. If I could bring you the pictures, you could tell my hands were, and I can only visually share, we were in this bus, and I had my hand out the window as we were driving up, as Isaac was walking up, and I knew it was him among all these kids.
Sure.
My
yeah.
hand touched his, wouldn't let go.
Wow.
Took up pictures of my son
and he
hugging as if we've known each other forever.
Because
I mean,
you
don't have words.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And same with Isaac, right?
Yeah. I just looked at a picture, and then my senses came to me that this is the mom that has been sending messages.
Oh, right.
And he calls me mom. And Betty, his mom, she and I embraced because of this love for her child.
Yeah.
It's her child.
Yeah.
And They gave me chickens and much. Here's the thing. We went out there with soccer balls and things we would get from Target.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we do as Americans. You go there, I get a mat that they've worked on for 3 months, you know, or you get food that they've picked or, mm-hmm. you know, everything is handmade.
Yeah.
Very different that my eyes were open to that.
Yeah.
And it's never about the thing. It's about the work behind it.
Yeah. So tell me the place in Uganda again.
Rakai.
Rakai.
It's Rakai, yeah.
Rakai. That would be your hometown.
That's my home district.
Home district.
Yeah.
And where did you learn English?
From the school. We have different schools there. And it was St. Simon, Nazareth, where she met me by that time.
Yeah, because your English is great, and I don't have to speak Ugandanese today,
right.
Which I was fully prepared to do.
You will start saying, hello, hello.
So it's just nice. This is good for me.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm just amazed that there has been this relationship that's been able to develop over time and through letter writing and it's so I'm just kind of at a loss.
Really? Yeah.
I kind of am.
And I think the money part that you talk about, that's automatic draft, right? So that it's not even about writing a check so
right.
much, right? Right now, what you couldn't do back then, you can now, is you send emails.
Oh, yeah.
And so there's emailing.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, I will tell you that World Vision, they go into a district, and then once they want to teach how to fish, right, versus fishing for a family or a community. So they say, okay, we've been here 15, 16 years. We are now, it's self-sustaining. We're pulling out, and they, you know, they're all over the world. I heard about that right after we were there, and my heart started breaking because it would have meant no more connection to Isaac. Mm. It was our only connection. That was our point of connection. I wanted to possibly support him through extra schooling, you know, do all those things. So with a person, and you know this story a little bit better, but someone in our community who was there with us and a person who as a child was sponsored through World Vision, who lives there, is an adult. His name is Johnson. Together they came up with, the acronym is RODI, Rakai Orphans Development Initiative, yeah. RODI. And they said, this community that was actually the birthplace of AIDS, this community needs help.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to provide sponsorship. We're going to do whatever we can. And Isaac and I have been together again since then now. That was 2009. So I didn't have to stop writing. We continued our relationship and continued going to school. And I had an opportunity to bring him here after he completed a couple of years of university.
Oh, that's just such a great story.
So
now, go ahead.
World Vision was the start.
Oh, okay. Now, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take a very short break. When I come back, I've got a bunch of questions for Isaac.
Yay!
Okay.
Yes. And so he's going to be on the hot seat. So Isaac, pull up a chair and make yourself uncomfortable.
Okay.
All right. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. I have in studio Marianne Milano and Isaac, and we are having a lively discussion about Marianne's participation in World Vision starting 18 years ago with adopting a child who was six at the time in Uganda in a little district called Rakai. And now, all these years later, not only have they stayed in touch and all that, but he is here visiting Marianne and they are in studio together. So, Isaac, I've got some questions. Your first time to America, your first impressions are what?
It's great to have such a question.
I got more good ones, just so you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I personally, as one, have been impressed with a lot of things. Basically, the way how people... the side are organized, the way they manage time. And I would like to take that back when I go.
Okay, you say the way we manage time?
We manage time.
Okay, can you give us an example of how we do it well that you'd like to take back?
Okay. So, like, you know, the time you are supposed to be at work, that's a better thing. Because majority of our colleagues there in Uganda, they have lost their jobs because they can't manage time, of which also they have failed to manage themselves. Then another thing, the way you wish to help others, that has impressed me a lot. And also that comes into my mind that I will never stop here. Since I have been helped, I will also go back and serve the community.
I'm inspired.
Yeah.
And you've got great passion. I can see it. You're going to make a big difference.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Now, can we talk about maybe some more superficial things about America?
like?
I don't know.
Food?
But,
oh, gosh.
I mean, coming
an abundance
from,
of food, right?
Yeah. Have you found some things you've enjoyed eating here?
A lot.
Okay. Give me the top one or two. What? Have you had a great pizza here? Or?
I have had a great pizza. And I think my mom can help me to distinguish more of the types because every day I learn new kind of food.
Okay.
Yeah, pasta he loves, right?
Yeah. Have you found anything you haven't cared for?
Lobster.
You didn't like lobster. Oh, that's interesting.
We got this guacamole with lobster in it versus getting anything bigger than that just to see. And
yeah.
He got the, fried fish plate. And I said, well, that's good because you can see if you like lobster, we can always come back if you do. So at the end of the night, I said, so what'd you think? And he shook his head, nah, not so much. Okay.
Lobster isn't for everybody.
No, it isn't.
No,
but
I mean,
we were there, friends asked to go, and it was
it's
nice.
It's a delicacy, but if you found one of those behind your furnace in the basement, you'd go crazy.
No.
Right. You know?
We got rice and beans there. Gosh. We had Asian, Irish, Italian, Mexican. So we've tried a lot of
too many combos.
Yeah. So
what
wild.
Else about America have you enjoyed or what has surprised you?
Okay. I have also been surprised basically on the side of sports. What we call football is different from yours here. And my question was, why do you call it football, yet they play it using hands? And for us, we know football as soccer. So that has been a great challenge.
Yeah. Hands are very important in American football.
Yeah.
We can't do much without hands in football.
Then also I have been impressed basically on the way you budget for yourselves.
Okay.
How we budget?
Your budget for yourselves, for example, you are organized in your daily work plans. That's a great thing, of which not that everyone can be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I have been impressed by that.
I'm trying to get the feeling of, I would imagine at your village in Rakai, that every day when you get up, there's a lot of work that has to be done, and you can't look the other way. I mean, you got to get to it. Is that right? I mean, so when you talk about budgeting time, it's like from the minute you get up, you got stuff to do, right?
Yeah.
So how are you hoping to improve the time back when you go home?
Okay, that's a good question. So for that one, it goes back to ask God, if at any time, if I'm under leadership in a certain organization, as the head, I can be able to start with that. In that other companies, other organizations can cope from that organization where I am or where I have been placed.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, so I have to tell you something I can't help thinking about. Isaac washes every piece of clothing by hand, okay? Every dish is washed by hand. There is no microwave oven. And so one of the first things Isaac said to me the first morning he woke up is, Mom, I want to learn how to use that. It was the washing machine because he would stare at it. And the stove.
Yeah.
And then the second thing, I remember later that day, he said, do you have a mop? And I said, if you spill something, let me know. I'll get a paper towel and wipe it up.
Mm-hmm.
We have so much convenience. We don't spend a lot of time washing dishes or washing each piece of clothing by hand. Right, Isaac?
Yeah.
So I thought, no wonder, Bill, when you say you get up in the morning and your work doesn't stop, we say that here, and now I'm saying that's kind of a joke.
Mm-hmm.
We push a button on the washing machine and in 40 minutes go and put it in the dryer. So I've really learned a lot about we know we are, but when you live with someone who literally does that, this is a disciplined young man. I don't know where you'd learned it, but he's doing his devotions and making his bed every morning. Before I get up, his bed's made. Mine's not.
Mm-hmm.
His is.
Mm-hmm. That's impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me more about Rakai. What kind of access do you have to medical, dental? Because you've got beautiful teeth.
Okay.
I mean, you could get a job selling toothpaste because of this million-dollar smile you have.
Oh, that's a great. But that's a district, as Rakai. It's in southern part of Uganda, close to Tanzania. So you may, basically, to keep our teeth, as you have recommended, we use herbal medicine.
What is that?
Herbal medicine?
Herbal medicine.
Herbal medicine. Well,
and what do you
so
do with herbal medicine?
We can move to some neighbor bushes. We know some different sticks. We get the sticks and we use them to clean our teeth daily.
Hmm.
Yes. Because previously it was a bit hard to meet the approved doctors in that place. And there, that's when, or where, at times we ask if God at one time can help us and get approved doctors, and we believe by God's faith, together with Roddy, we will be able to get doctors with a recommendable sponsorship and recommendable training to come back and serve in the community.
That would be ideal, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. Anyone out there listening? now,
pitch harder, Marianne. Yeah, I think this is a good cause.
Well, but also the training. Now, Isaac was able to go, and he's going to be an accountant. Right now, he's working in the Rody office. They have a school there. They just built a school, and they sponsor kids. And so so Isaac knew he wanted to be trained in something that he liked, like here. Just like here, we want to learn something we like and go make a living.
Uh-huh.
And that's what he wants to do and to serve his community. Unfortunately, it's not a doctor. But he has friends who are becoming, as one friend, Gottfried, becoming a social worker. Another friend I saw, he had the stethoscope around him.
Mike.
Becoming a doctor?
Yeah. It's the one who went.
Yeah. Yeah, so you just want to keep good friends with Mike.
Yeah.
You do, you know, because you want to make that call. Hey, Mike, I got something here, you know.
So now I have to ask, something just came up for me. I got you a toothbrush, right? And I, had you used a toothbrush before?
Okay. That's a clear question, because this question was general
yes.
to the community.
Okay.
So I, personally, I may be able to access the toothpaste, but my brother can't. So
yes.
that's why yeah. they pick up small sticks, which are in the form of herbal medicine,
mm-hmm.
and they use those ones to clean their teeth.
Brothers do.
Yeah, I want some of those herbal sticks, because if I can just get my teeth to look half as white as yours, I mean, seriously, that's crazy.
We can send you to Rakai, Bill.
Yeah, I definitely want to consider.
Station Trip, Bill and company.
Definitely want to consider that. Well, Marianne, this has been an amazing journey in your life. I mean, this is just your heart's so full, isn't it?
Yeah, because we are in it right now, November 15th, Isaac will get on the plane and go back. And we'll still continue our relationship, but I think, you know, that and around the holidays, I'll really be able to reflect and, you know, start piecing more of the story together that God's writing.
Mm-hmm.
Who knew? I mean, I had hopes and dreams that he'd be able to go to university and I'd be able to bring him here. And that was, you know how you say, oh, I hope I win the lottery, right? I hope he could come here someday.
Yeah.
The fact that it's happening, it's, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's so exciting.
Yeah.
And everything is new. And the other thing is, Isaac is 24, And he's wide-eyed and wondered. You know, we went to a farm today. Everywhere we go, it's new. And it's having your, almost having your six-year-old with you who's show me everything. And everything is.
That sense of wonder. We've completely lost. As you get older, you know. You
don't wonder for anything.
You take an 18-year-old or a 20-year-old to the zoo and you show them a bear and they go, yeah, it's a zoo. It's a bear in the zoo. You know?
But just like so, and he's also been so appreciative. So I will come home from the gym or from work. Welcome home, Mom. No one's ever said that to me, you know, or well done. Good job. Constant encouragement.
Mm-hmm.
So
that works
praise
for you,
to his yeah, praise to his mom Betty.
Yeah,
who is such a sacrificial person, wanted the best for all of her kids, and he was raised really well. So I just I get to know him starting at six, but that's there was great. A lot more to him before then.
And your brother is how old?
It's now one is 20 years.
One is 22?
Another one is 22.
Okay. And did they have someone like Marianne?
No.
Okay, you got the big blessing, didn't you?
But what's nice about World Vision is when you help a child, you help the family and the community.
Okay.
So the goat, which you called Jacqueline, was there for the whole family, goat milk and one of those things.
So did you milk the goat? No.
You didn't? Huh? Oh, I had visions of you milking the goat. But you took care of when we went out there, Betty, your mom, wanted to be sure that I knew what a good steward of what you had been given that you were and took us to the fields to make sure we saw everything that he had taken care of.
That's a great story. Well, thank you so much, Marianne. And
thanks,
Isaac,
for
so nice
us.
To meet you. Welcome to America. And I hope you have a great time. The rest of your time.
Thank you so much, because I know you may ask, how brave am I? Because not that everyone who comes here gets access to this.
That's true. Only 1 in 28 million get
as
access
you
to this.
Is, how is it that maybe I'm a bit fluent in English? So I just thank God, first of all, for all that he's doing in my life.
Mm-hmm.
The little I was getting from Mom Marian, also I said, no, I need to make external use of the love she gives me. Then I said, no, I need to keep on being a leader wherever you go. So with all that courage in leadership, I think that is what has mentored me up to this level.
Mm. Oh, it's beautiful. Well, thank you for speaking English, and that way I didn't have to speak Ugandanese.
Thanks for being easy on us.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so,
thank you so much. We'll take a little break and be right back with lots more. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.